Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. and WGXE Acra 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Larry Gambin. Larry is a self-described recovering graphic artist. The former art director, illustrator and designer escaped Manhattan and has turned to wildlife and nature photography to express his love of art and the outdoors. Larry and his wife Amelia reside in Prattsville, New York. However, they extensively travel North America, where he has captured unique and inspiring images of wildlife, wild animals and wild places that few of us have ever seen. His work has been shown in galleries, exhibitions, magazines, newspapers and books. And you can see his work on larrygambin.com, flickr.com/photos/lgambin, and nationalgeographicstock.com. You can purchase his work at the Catskill Fine Arts Gallery in Hunter, New York. Larry, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad you're here.
Welcome, Larry. Are you enjoying your fall so far, your autumn?
Oh, it's absolutely excellent.
There aren't many better places to be for autumn than, I suppose, the Catskill Mountains.
Yes.
Oh, I don't think there's any place that is any better than this.
Well, I don't know about that. Scotland?
Scotland, Mott Day.
Do they have leaves in Scotland? I don't know.
Do they have trees?
Yeah. Most of the pictures I see, it's just grassy rolling hills.
Actually, you know, during the high winds, a lot of the times the trains have been cancelled because of leaves on the track.
Oh, you really?
Wow. Yeah. Really? Which is...
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. One of the things that I've heard when I tell people when I'm out shooting out west or whatever, that this is one of the top destinations for foliage photography in the world. I mean, people come from all over the world to come to upstate New York and New England for one
of the nicest places I ever went for that, the foliage and stuff, was Letchworth. Is it Letchworth Park?
Letchworth State Park. Yeah. With those three falls.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I went there a couple times this summer. I ate at the inn, the Mary Jemison Inn, and beautiful, beautiful. We were there last year around this time for my birthday, and it actually won this past year. It was rated the... best state park in the United States.
Was it really?
It's kind of, people don't really know about Letchworth a lot unless you're from Western New York.
I know no one that's known of the place, but then I've never been to Custer State Park in South Dakota.
Yeah, I've never been there either.
You know,
that's the best state park I've ever been to. Yeah,
but you're dead right, Larry. You know, the up here, it's so picturesque, it's so beautiful. You know, there's... New York is New England. This East Coast is full of superb greenery, you know, everywhere. Yeah.
This is one of the most beautiful places in the world as far as I'm concerned.
Well, in saying that, I can see why you were glad to get out of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying that is because I've had to go to New York twice a week for the last 4 weeks to do a course for my company. However, you know, when I get there, I'm like, this is great being in New York State, being in New York City. But when I go to leave and I come back, it's great to get back. You know, that sense of coming out of the city and coming up again is fantastic.
Well, I hate to give numbers, but I've lived here for 32 years. And, This is by far one of the best places I've ever been.
Yeah.
And I grew up on Long Island, and I came up here on vacations. And when I moved up here, I said, I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you notice, I once spoke with a gentleman that said he came up here when he was young, probably in the 60s and 70s, for vacations from Long Island. And he said it was like the mountains were air-conditioned.
Yes, they were.
And now he said that it's just kind of hot everywhere. Have you noticed that at all?
Oh, absolutely. We moved up here in 1983, and probably the first 5 or 6 years we moved here. It was just like when I was a kid. No one here had air conditioning. No one. And I don't know anybody who had it. I put air conditioning in. I was a graphic artist. I was a freelance graphic artist when I moved up here. I was working for Puma. And I'd stick to the pages during the summer, during certain weeks. So I had to have an air conditioner in the window. About 5 years later, everybody was getting air conditioning in their homes, in their bedrooms especially, because you couldn't sleep. It was so hot. Yeah. And it was a prolonged period. It wasn't just a week or two like it used to be when I was a kid. Because I actually used to go, I worked on a farm in Middleburg as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
My grandmother and uncle lived up here. And my twin brother and I would come up here and work on a farm for, I don't know, 2 months.
Yeah.
From morning to night.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I loved it.
Was it milk? Was it dairy farm?
A dairy farm.
Right. Yeah.
Middleburg is beautiful. I looked at houses there. I really wanted to see if I could get a place.
Oh, I wanted to do it, but it was too far away from the train.
Yeah.
Because I used to have to go down once or twice a week. When I first moved up here in 83, I used to have to go down to the city mm-hmm. once or twice a week and to Amtrak. And Hudson was the nearest place for me to go.
Yeah.
And so we came up here on just a weekend and found this place. And we've been here ever since.
Beautiful. While we have a chance, I wanted to correct myself. It's the Glen Iris Inn in Letchworth, not the Mary Jemison.
Right.
Somebody listening knowing would... The Glen Iris Inn is beautiful. Check that out. Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right.
So you've mentioned it a couple of times. You work for Puma.
Puma.
We call it Puma in Scotland.
Yeah, we call it Puma here in the U.S.
Jaguar and all these
yes,
other...
Yeah.
It's not enough that it's an exotic cat. We have to pronounce it in an exotic way.
Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Van
yes.
Gogh. So you work for Puma.
Yes.
And you work for...
Adidas, Nike, Puma.
And what did you do exactly?
I designed their... I was a sportswear designer way back when, and then I started designing t-shirts because I could draw. And this is before computers. And for Puma, in the 80s, 84, 85, 86, all the nasty t-shirts I drew by hand. And then I started working for Adidas. And I did their a lot of their t-shirts, and then I did their art shirts, which is something over the arms, long sleeves, front, back. Then I did it for Nike, and then I did it for Reebok and Nutmeg Mills. And
did you ever meet any of the stars?
And... Oh, sure. Yeah. I actually designed a lot of stuff for some of the stars. I did... Who is it? Patrick Ewing. I did his the logo for his
I don't know who
line.
Patrick Ewing is.
Oh, he is one of the...
Is he in Dallas?
No. He was one of the tallest people I ever met. Hands the size of a tennis racket.
Wow.
And one of the... He was a gentleman, just a gentleman. The girls were fitting him for this warm-up suit they were designing for him, and they had to stand on the table to get to his shoulders. This guy was huge.
Wow.
And it was always, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. He was just a gentleman. Just a man.
Right. And what did you do for him?
I designed the logo for his line.
Right. So he had his own line. What was that guy?
Jordan.
Jordan.
Yeah. That was a Nike line. That was a Nike line.
Right.
And they were bringing Ewing in to do that. I met a lot of people. God help me, some of them were just idiots.
and was it a cutthroat business?
Yes, it was. Yeah, absolutely, yes, it was. I did the biggest night of my life as far as being a designer is we had a Puma show at Studio 54.
Yeah.
And 90% of the work was my stuff. It was all, you know, all graphic designs and whatnot. And while we were there, the guys who had done the printing were coming up to me and the people that I work for and showing them new designs for the following year.
Wow.
So using you as a platform to...
No, actually, not as a platform. They were stepping on my head to do this. It was absolutely stunning. And I was... freaking out. There I was in Studio 54. I was 34 years old or 35 years old. And I thought I'd made it. And I said, wow, you can't get any further than this. And I had people just killing me that night in Studio 54, where they have the couches and all this. I had never been to Studio 54. I would never, ever have been in Studio 54 if it had not been for that night. And I had people trying just to crush my head.
Wow.
That says it all, doesn't it?
Our first song is going to be Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones. What can you tell us about this song, Larry? Why would you bring this?
Because I think the Rolling Stones are the greatest rock and roll band in the world.
Uh-huh.
This is a song that I just really related to. I believe I was in the service when I heard the song, and it just kept me away from it.
And they are one of the best bands in the world.
Oh, no. It's the greatest. Bar none, I really believe it's the greatest rock and roll band in the world.
And like 2 years ago, they celebrated their 50th anniversary. Many bands can say that.
Remarkable.
So, old farts doing rock and roll, but they can still do it.
Give Me Shelter by the formidable Rolling Stones.
The greatest rock and roll band in the world.
Hey, Larry, do you know how the Rolling Stones got their name?
No.
Right. I was reading this today. Brian Jones, the ex-member of the band, was on the telephone to... Once the guys had joined the band and they were practicing and stuff, he was on to this jazz magazine on the phone, and the guy was, like, I think he was setting up a gig for them or something, and he said, "So what's the name of the band?" And there was an album lying on the floor, and it was, whose was it? The guy who sang Rolling Stone.
Oh,
was it Bob Dylan?
Or? Bob Dylan.
No. A jazz guy. The name will come to me. Anyway, so he looked at the album and it was number 5 on the list. And he went, Rolling Stone, that's the name of the band. And that's how they got their name in the band.
Wow.
Wasn't he Buddy Guy? It was somebody else.
Buddy Guy is one of my favorite artists. So,
that's how they got their name.
And I will look this up when I go home.
Brian Jones. Sad story about him, wasn't there?
Oh.
Found at the bottom of his pool, having been thrown out of the band a month previous.
Yeah.
Apparently it was a drug overdose, but they say there's a lot of conjecture about how he died.
A lot of conjecture about how a lot of people died.
Yeah, but they say some people were saying that he was murdered, and there was a guy who was working on his house arguing with him. And they've tried about 10 times to reopen the case, but the police force have recently, as 2009, have decided that it's not going to be reopened, and the case will stand as it was. The guy died under mysterious circumstances, and that's it.
It's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Beatles. Pete Best and, Stuart Sutcliffe. I don't know if you know who Stuart Sutcliffe is.
Yeah, I do.
He died and he was beaten up in Germany. He was a member of the Beatles. And he was beaten up in Germany in an alleyway. And he died of complications. I think it was sometime later. I think he died of a brain aneurysm or something. As a result of being beaten up in Germany. And he was a member of the Beatles. But
And they played a lot in Germany. They were very famous in Germany.
Yeah. And
then did Ringo replace him? Is that how that happened?
Ringo, I think he played the guitar, but Ringo replaced Pete Best. Pete Best was the drummer, and they replaced him with Ringo Starr. And then they became the phenomenon that they are.
It's funny that everybody used to think that Ringo Starr couldn't play drums worth a darn.
Mm.
But I actually thought he was a darn good drummer.
Well, at the time, he was one of the best drummers, and that's why he was recruited.
Yeah, well, he was very, very vilified by everybody. I remember, and I was probably in fifth or sixth grade when they hit the charts.
Yeah.
And I just remember hearing that this guy couldn't play drums to save his life, and I thought, wow. I had a friend of mine who played drums, and he couldn't play to save his life, but this guy was great.
I find that a lot with art, though, that it's all subjective, and sometimes people will criticize just for the sake of criticizing or even to sound like they're experienced or cultured or they're so intuitive they can see something negative about art that other people can't see, and it's like...
Try being an artist.
Yeah, you know?
Well, you know, Larry, I've seen a lot of your photographs. And that's one of the reasons why I've asked you a number of times and finally said yes to come on the show. So I think your pictures of the animals that you take pictures of are fantastic, you know. So and I urge people who are listening to go online and look them up. You know, you don't get on the cover or in pictures of National Geographic if you're not taking good pictures.
Yeah.
So What's your favorite types of pictures that you take, and what's your most memorable? And
wow, that's really hard. It's like, which is your favorite of your children? And I have not been on the cover of National Geographic.
No, you should be.
Okay,
I was gonna say it's like The Incredible Life of Walter Mitty.
I actually just sold 3 photos on National Geographic stock.
Right.
In August, and
the one that sticks out for me is the fox mid-jump.
The four fox. I did a composite photo of four foxes. I've been watching foxes, and this is a panoramic photo, 12 by 36. And what I did is I took a fox in the Lamora Valley who is hunting for probably mice or voles. And he's listening. He's setting up. He jumps, and all of a sudden, all you see is his butt sticking out of the out of the snow, where he gets his meal,
his reward, his prize,
his reward. And my wife Amelia kept saying, "Why don't you just do a composite of this?" And I worked as a professional artist all my life, and I worked Photoshop, Illustrator. And I did not want to do anything other than photography. I just want, because back when I was in the service, and as a kid, I in high school, I did photography. I was black and white for 20 years. All I did was black and white. And then I started doing digital photography, and I didn't want to be a digital artist with this.
You just wanted to keep it raw and pure.
Yes, because that's what I always had done. And Amelia always wanted me to do something with these foxes. So I had my first solo show at Catskill Fine Arts in Hunter. And they gave me the number of shots I should have. And then they moved some furniture or something. You need four more shots. And Amelia goes, "Do the foxes."
Well, that was easy.
So I did. Because I used to just wail away. I'd take 30 or 40 shots of this fox. And I can't tell you how many foxes I've seen do this. But I had one particular really good one at a place called Hitching Post in the Lamora Valley. So I went home and I did it. And it's probably one of the most iconic photographs I've ever done, because it's been, I've actually won a lot of awards with it. And it's been, I've sold it probably more than anything that I've ever done.
How satisfying is it to win an award?
It's okay.
For something that you've created, though.
You know? You want to know something? I don't know why, but it's just okay. I don't care. It's doing the photography is what it's about. I think it sounds a little bit stupid, but it's just about doing the photography. Winning the awards is, I've won a bunch of awards, mostly online stuff. And it just doesn't, you know, if it's online, does it mean anything?
Well, you know, it's the way we're moving forward. So forever, you know, for a lot of people who are younger than us, and we are getting up there, Larry. It's everything.
I guess. I just don't know. But I don't do it for that. I don't even do it for the money.
Well, here's what I was going to say. You know, if you're going to be standing for 8 hours, 10 hours, you can tell me,
13 hours
to get that one
there.
Shot, yeah. You have to be doing it for the love of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been on a wolf for 13 hours before. I was one time, it was in May, a couple of years ago, when we had that eclipse. I was out shooting on a wolf. There was a dead elk in the water. It was, probably killed by wolves, brought down by the wolves. And I was there 13 hours. And that day there was a partial eclipse of the sun.
Wow.
So at the apex of the eclipse, I turned around, took three photos of it, and went back to the wolf. And I was out there for 13 hours. And I was in my glory, because I'd never been that much on a wolf in my entire life. You know, and I do love eclipses.
You know, I was watching a program about 3 weeks ago, and it was a guy filming a very rare tiger or lion. I think it was in Russia. And they set these motion cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And
stop motion?
Yeah, and he'd been there for months. And eventually he looked at one of the cameras and he saw the elusive thing that he wanted to see. And he started crying. And he was just so overcome by it. And I was watching it and I felt myself getting caught up in it, you know. And I was like, "This it must become, at that point, everything to
it's
them."
It's an obsession, I think. Mm. I have game cameras in my backyard because I just wanted them. And when I first put them up, I got a bear walking through my backyard. And I got a bunch of coyotes, one coyote, actually, a bunch of times. And this was probably a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Never seen him since.
Oh, weird.
just passing through.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy. And yeah. I put these things out almost every night. I'll stop for a couple of nights because it's really, really tedious to go through. I get deer. I get feral cats, and I get a lot of raccoons going through. And I like the bear and the coyotes, but I haven't seen anything in over a month and a half or so.
Just last night, there was a bear going through the dumpster at the coffee shop in Wyndham. I mean, like at
the coffee? Daly's?
Yeah, it's like 6 p.m., so wow. Still daylight out. Bear on the dumpster, fell inside, I guess, looked a little dazed.
We had friends over the other night that lived down past County 17.
Yeah.
And right before they got there, they came over for dinner and they left. And they called us on the way down County 17. They passed a bear that just nearly hit it.
Oh, yeah.
They slammed on their brakes, everything.
Oh, goofy thing.
Shall we move on?
Your next item is a buck knife. I was trying to tie that into bears somehow, but...
yeah, there's no way you're going to tear that in. I was like, this is what I'm going to bring with me.
Hunting, or I got nothing.
You got nothing.
So Larry, tell us and the listeners, what is a buck knife?
It's just a big folding knife. It's probably a 5-inch knife. I've had this thing since I was in the service, and I carried it with me everywhere I went. When I am out photographing, I never fail to have that knife. And if I'm in bear country, the buck knife is right next to the bear spray.
Yeah.
It is the best tool anybody could ever have. My dad gave me on my 50th birthday, which was way too long ago, a commemorative buck knife. I don't carry that. I have the same buck knife I had 40 years ago when I was in the service. And it's the sharpest knife I own because I do sharpen it. And it's a tool. And it's just a tool. You cannot go out into the woods without having some sort of...
protective.
No, it's not protective. It's not. It's a tool. It's a
tool.
All
right, right.
It's a tool. If I want to go out for a protective thing, I'll carry a 9mm. But I'm not licensed here in New York, so I don't carry one. It's not the animals I worry about. It's the two-legged ones.
I'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be back.
Hasta la vista, Barry.
Yeah. Yes.
Barry. I like it, Mike.
Thank you.
I got that. Caught that there.
Larry, do you remember the first knife that you ever got?
Yes, I do. I still have it. And it's a hunting knife, and it's probably the sharpest knife I own. My dad gave it to me, and I actually have it on the bookcase where I bring it out when I have to open a bird seed and things like that. For my bird feeders. I actually put cork around it so it floats in case, because I did a lot of fishing as a kid.
Oh yeah.
And I don't eat fish anymore because I ate so much fish as a kid.
Sure.
But my dad bought it for me. I must have been 10 years old, and I still have the knife, and I still use it.
I remember I was around that age and got a jackknife, and it seemed like for a young boy, that's just a really cool kind of thing to have.
Oh, yeah, he gave me a jackknife and it was called the hunting knife. It's got a sheath.
Yeah,
and it's about probably 7 inches long with a 4-inch long handle.
Mike's got a knife in her uses.
That's right. It's mostly decorative. That's cool.
What is it?
It's a Gerber solid tang blade, and you can use it for batoning wood or
cutting sausage.
Anything really, cutting sausage while mm-hmm. you're backpacking, mm-hmm. which I thoroughly enjoy.
What I used to do with my with this hunting knife when many, many years ago, when I probably first got out of the service, I used to carve with it.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot of carving with it, carve wood, and do real intricate carving on things. And it was just, I grew up shooting and using knives. I never hunted. Mm-hmm. I actually have killed animals, but they were like crawling across the pavement with their guts hanging out, they run over, and
sure.
So I've put
them in the misery.
Yeah. And don't like doing that. I've done that twice. I don't remember every single second of it.
Oh,
every single second.
Darn animals.
Well, yeah, I love animals. That's what I shoot. That's what I shoot with a camera.
Hmm.
And the whole idea of shooting animals has just changed my entire life as far as how I feel about wildlife, about life, about nature. It's an amazing thing to watch all the things that I've seen. You go out there. I go out to Yellowstone in February because it's the wolf's mating season. I go out in May because all the babies come out, and the bears and the bison, and a little bit later than that, the elk.
Hmm.
And that's just, that's church. You go to church out there, you really do.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Now, we need to move on, obviously, because we've got another 3 of your songs to play.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what's the next thing on the list?
The next song?
That Larry's taken to him on his Catskill getaway.
The next one is Money for Nothing. By Dire Straits. This is a British rock band. And Larry, why this song?
Because it's good.
Yeah.
No, it's great.
Actually, because they're installing microwave ovens, and I worked a job when I got out of the service out in Greenport, Long Island, and I worked as a laborer in a development or a apartment complex out in Greenport, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we were asked to bring all the refrigerators upstairs, all of the microwaves upstairs, and all of the dishwashers upstairs. And how do you do that? You do that on your back. And we had probably 120 units. And that was probably the hardest job I ever did. And money for nothing, and, you know, that song just sung.
Resonated.
Sung to me. It was.
And it was about microwave ovens and.
yes, because
refrigerators
and you had to get a blister on your thumb. I can't play anything. I could draw my butt off, but I can't play anything. You're never gonna get rich as an artist.
And this was the first song ever played on MTV in Europe.
Was it really?
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
The first video, yeah.
The first time I heard this song, I flipped because it registered with me. It was an amazing song. I can't even imagine someone ever speaking to me like that. Weren't they Australian?
They're from England.
They were, yeah, British band, and they were spending some time in New York City, and Mark Knopfler, I think I pronounced that right.
Knopfler.
Yeah.
Knopfler, he wrote the lyrics in part while he was at an appliance store in New York, and he was at the back of the store, and TVs were playing MTV, and a guy working there in a baseball cap and work boots and a checkered shirt was delivering boxes and came by and was checking out MTV and said, you know, what are those Hawaiian noises? That ain't working. And he said,
oh, really?
And
really?
So Mark wrote these lyrics down and wrote the show. And this music video, their music video was one of the first ever to incorporate computer animation,
yep.
which at the time was totally groundbreaking.
Oh, I did not know that at all.
And Sting does the song's falsetto.
Yes,
falsetto
he does.
At the end.
Yes, that I know. That I know.
Yeah, he starts a song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want my empty.
It sounds like Sting. That's pretty good, Larry.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of Sting.
Listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Today we have Larry Gambin, and that was Money for Nothing, Dire Straits. I wanted to say Money for Nothing and Your Chicks for Free, but
that would be wrong. So wrong.
Now, Larry, your next item is a cast iron Dutch oven. Why would you like to bring that?
Because I want to eat.
Moving on then.
What kind of stuff would you make in the Dutch oven?
Anything you can eat. I want that was probably a Dutch oven is what you see over every old movie you've ever seen over the fireplace that they put out on that arm.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And every leftover they threw in there, and they put over the fire. Yum. And I like to cook. I like to eat, especially like to eat. And I use a Dutch oven all the time. I do a lot of cooking with it, and I do have a cast iron one. And that's what I would bring if I was going to a cabin, because there isn't a squirrel that'll be safe. If I'm out
there. I thought you said it doesn't like killing animals.
Yeah, wait a minute. And well, you'd also bring a sketch pad and number two pencils.
Yes, yes, because I have been an artist my entire life. I did not start out doing photography. I started drawing with pencils. Mm-hmm. And a sketch pad, and then I went into charcoal, and then I started oil painting and watercolor painting. And watercolor painting and I never got along. It's just way too difficult. Mm-hmm. And then I've been doing photography since I was probably 10 or 11 years old. And
so 7 years?
Seven or 8 years, at least 8 years. And up until probably 1984 and 1985, all I did was black and white photography. When I was I shot black and white as a kid when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in the service, I was exclusively black and white because I was stationed at Fort Bragg, and they had some of the most incredible photo labs you could imagine. And I was actually in the Air Force, but I was stationed on Fort Bragg with the Army.
Hmm.
And I had access to everything they had there, and they just had incredible photo labs, the most professional labs I've ever been in my life.
Right.
And then in 83, when I got married, I couldn't afford to be a photographer anymore. And I guess, I had a digital camera when they very first came out, a Sony thing, which was a very famous camera, but it really did stink. And I actually turned it in, and I don't think until 1993 or 1994 that I really started doing digital photography.
Right.
That was early, even.
Oh, even then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a Sony camera, and which I thought was really good. Mm. I got some very good photos. And my wife actually wishes that I stayed with all of these cameras, because I used to shoot just only landscapes. I was a strict landscape photographer. But one of the things that I noticed is every time I went out, I'd see an animal.
Mm.
So at one point I talked Amelia into me getting a 70 to 300 lens, millimeter lens, and that worked for a while. And then I got a 100 to 400 millimeter lens, and that didn't work. And they just kept going up and up and up. But
now you're a renowned photographer.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. It's just, I just love doing this so much. I love the experience of being out there. I love being outdoors, number one. And my wife and I do this together. I mean, she's out there for every shot you see. If you go on my website, you go on my Flickr site, every shot, Amelia's there. And I've recently got her into shooting, though she doesn't like to do it because she's a looker. She just likes to look at the stuff.
Sure. Right.
And,
yeah, I've seen a picture of her on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good picture.
She's put a couple of photos up, and she has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos. And she's going to start, she keeps telling me she's going to start putting them up. She's got some great photos.
Great.
But
yeah, we'll keep pushing her and we'll keep prodding her.
Well, what I keep saying is she's going to be the first one in National Geographic. So don't hurry along, darling.
Don't want any fighting going on here. All right, so what's the next thing, Mike? Come on, let's move us along.
Coming up next, we have Hippies on the Corner by Joe Sample. Tell us about that, Larry.
Yeah, Joe. Just calling you Joe there.
Tell us about the Joe.
This is one of my favorite songs. It's just instrumental. And Hippies on the Corner is something I've been listening to this for years and years and years. And I love the song, and it's one of the best songs I think I've ever heard.
I mean, I listened to it the other day there, and it's, you're right. I mean, the guy, member of the Jazz Crusaders.
Yes, and he just died in 2014. Yeah. And
you know, after we listen to the song, I've got something I want to bring up, and I want to know if you know this about his music.
Okay? All right, I would love to hear this.
So we'll talk about it. Once we've heard the song, we'll talk about it. That was Joe Sample, Hippies on a Corner.
Yes.
Very great song. Now, Larry, did you know, Mike, did you know that some of Joe Sample's works were featured on the Weather Channel's Local on the Eights?
I did not know that.
No, I did not.
Segments and his songs, Rainbow Seekers, is included in their 2008 compilation release, The Weather Channels Presents Smooth Jazz 2.
Yeah, Get out of town.
I'm going to kill myself.
So good that the Weather Channel uses it. Now, your next item is a set of binoculars.
Yes. Watch animals, of course. Mm-hmm. You can't see what's coming at you if you don't have any optics.
Now, exactly.
Do you sight these animals with the binoculars and then pull out the huge lens?
I have really big lenses. I actually have a bunch of them, but probably the best spotter I have is my wife. My wife is really good, wow. But it's also scientifically known that women are better at spotting things than men.
I didn't know that.
I read this a long time ago. Actually, not too long ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, that women... My wife is uncanny in spotting owls. I've spotted one or two owls in my life. I probably have 15 or 16 photographs of owls, and she spots them. And we will be walking through the woods, and she'll go, "Look at that. What? There's an owl there. It's a barred owl. Where?" And it takes me 15 minutes to find the freaking thing. And she, right there, over by that limb that goes like this. And you're in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
And then I will finally see it, and I will shoot the owl. And I can't tell you how many times that has happened. And it used to drive me crazy. And then I read a story that women are much more
visually gifted. Yeah.
The receptive to that. Have you been to my website?
I haven't yet, no. I haven't been able to check it out.
I got actually do the Flickr one.
Okay.
Do you want to give it a quick mention, name the website?
Yeah, sure. It's larrygammon.com, which is probably some of the finest work I've ever done. And then I have, I don't even know if I have it here. It's
Flickr?
Yeah, okay.
/Gambon.
Yeah, flickr.com/photos/lgambon. Right. That's my latest work. My brother died. He used to do my websites. And since he passed, this is just way out of my realm to do it. I did one update since he passed, and it took me probably 9 months to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's just too much work. So I've been using Flickr. I'm probably going to go to pixels.com or fineart.com and sell from there. But it's just, I can't build websites. It's just not my stuff.
Sure.
Well, I'm sure people listening will be intrigued enough to go and check it out, and hopefully they will.
But Flickr is where all of it's at, where all the good stuff is at.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now we'll move on to the last song.
Coming Home Baby by Zachary Bro. Bro saved a man from drowning. Tell us about that, Larry.
He saved somebody in Italy in 1988. Mm-hmm. And in 1997 in Miami Beach, he went out. Someone else was drowning. He went out and had a heart attack while doing it. And the guy was only 36 years old.
Really?
I didn't realize.
And to me, he was newly discovered. This guy just blew my mind with how good a guitarist this guy was. And I've been into this jazz and into this type of music. And I think this thing came out in 1992 or something like that. But everything he ever did, I loved. And then I remember hearing on the radio that he died saving somebody. I didn't realize at the time that he died of a heart attack. I don't think anybody else did. I think he died in the water. And the woman who...
He was trying to save.
She died also.
Oh.
But this is one of the most incredible jazz songs I know. Thank you.
That was Zachary Bro, Coming Home Baby. Fantastic. Great song. Now, we're coming to the end of the show.
Thank God.
I'm glad that you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Thank you, Larry.
I have.
You know, Larry, we could obviously, and we have talked off mic for, and I'm sure we could talk for ages longer about so many things, but we can't because we've only got an hour. So before we head off into the sunset and you leave our majestic mountains for pastures new for to take more photographs, we have one more question to ask, and that question is, Mike.
Larry, how do you take your coffee?
With vanilla.
Okay.
Coffee mate. Two vanilla coffee mates.
Nice.
But it's dark coffee. It's Italian roast.
See, I knew we were getting there. It's always good coffee.
It's actually very, very strong coffee.
Yes. Well done. Same as me, mate.
Oh, yeah.
I've got to have strong coffee.
Oh, it has to be.
Mine's is dark roast, black, one sugar.
Oh, and now I actually used to do one sugar, and I stopped at one sugar recently. I just decided I didn't need it. And the calories.
Yeah.
Well, good for you, because I've been thinking about that as well, and I've started using a bit of honey.
I like honey also.
Larry, thanks for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. It's
been a pleasure being here.
So, thank you.
Hi, I'm Larry Gammon, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA, 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and for everyone at WGXC. Thanks.